That's exactly what Paul is telling you here. Everybody knew that soldiers, notice, had to gird their loins so they would be tight and ready for battle. And what he means mentally here is gird your mind. Get it disciplined. The imaginations of our mind go crazy. We're easily tempted. Our eyes wander everywhere. Okay, start disciplining it. Not in guilt, but rather just in the discipline of my service. The breastplate and the helmet. The breastplate of righteousness. You are righteous before God. You cannot lose that righteousness because of the blood of the Lamb, and therefore it protects this part of you. And if you remember, the Roman went all the way up, almost down to the groin. The helmet of salvation. Why? Because if Satan can knock your belief in your own salvation off your head, he's got you. It's all mental. It's all mental. Everything that happens in the physical world is simply a product of something going on in somebody's mind. Every action that ever happened in the history of the universe was the product of somebody's mind. In the beginning, God said, he had a thought. God said, let us do this. So understand that. Persecution comes in two forms. First one is coercion. This is the one everybody's familiar with. Do you accept Jesus or die? I guess I die. I guess that's the bottom line there. Or we'll take all your property, or we'll take your children, or we'll do this, or we'll make you jump through hoops. That's coercion. Co-opting is the more subtle part. In Russia, the communists first gave great liberty to the Protestants in order to destroy the Orthodox Church. Once the Orthodox had collapsed, then they turned on the Protestants. Remember, Satan has a threefold plan for everybody. God has a plan for you. Satan has a plan for you. Deceive, use, and trash is Satan's. He'll deceive you first, and he'll give you some gifts if that works, and he'll use you. And when it's done, never forget, always trash, unless you turn to Jesus. He's the only trash saver, I guess. There are five stages in any persecution. They sometimes overlap. The order changes maybe a bit, but you go through these five stages. Number one, you have to identify the target group. Biblical Christians, faithful Catholics, Roman Catholics, Orthodox Catholics, meaning those from the Eastern churches, anyone who adheres to their doctrine firmly is already being targeted in this new think of tolerance and diversity. Anybody who believes what they believe is called rigid, unadaptable to change, in desperate need of some kind of remediation and mental therapy. Already you're under attack in much of the media. Okay, the first one is identify the target group. You're being identified and stereotyped. That's it. Marginalize the target group. Shove the target group outside the boundaries of normal social intercourse, so that people cannot defend themselves. They have no way of defending their viewpoint in the public platform. That's why everyone got so furious at Mel Gibson, and that was my argument to a lot of Protestants who griped about the theological differences we had with some of the things Mel put in the film. I said, but you've got to understand, the bigger battle is the fact that Mel Gibson dared to proclaim what he believed in public in this film. And it just took all of the T&D crowd. They went ballistic because they're trying to shove religion totally out of the public square. And they tried to vilify him as an anti-Semite. And, you know, you remember the whole battle that went in. And I've told friends of mine, I've had some spats over this one. So even if it were a Buddhist doing a film on the life of Gautama Buddha, the Christians should have been out there protesting with them and protecting that right.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888 888-245-4234-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome and good evening. Welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I'm Roy Avila, your moderator and host for the first hour anyway. Tonight, I have the distinct honor and pleasure to interview a woman who I've heard speak many times, and the more I hear, the more I learn. It's Joan Perros. She's a frequent guest on this program and speaker all over the country on issues regarding Agenda 21 and freedom and all kinds of good things like that. So, Joan, how did you get into this?
Well, there's going to be a woman on the next hour, and about 8 years ago I was listening to her talk about world government, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, this is just, it's too extreme, it's outrageous, it's unbelievable. And due to a set of circumstances, there were some doors that opened to me, some opportunities, rather unique, and I ended up traveling around the world to some major United Nations conferences, Gorbachev meetings, other conferences of global significance, and I started listening to what was going on in, you know, at the global government level. And what I saw, it was just unbelievable. And so I had to prove it to myself, as you're going to have to prove it to yourself. And that's how I got started.
Well, you were in those meetings with all those kinds of people, hearing about all of the things that they wanted to get done with us and our society. What was going through your mind?
Well, you know, sometimes it's like, I think it's a whole psychological process like death. You know, you go through stages, you go through grief. There were times when I cried in my room at night. You go through anger, you just go through shock, you go through loss, and then you start to deal with it. And for me, it's been something I've kind of separated myself from emotionally as best as I can, and I just kind of look at it academically.
Because the more I hear you speak, the more I hear the Michael Shaws and, you know, those folks of the world speak, you know, and you start to see things tie together.
Exactly.
It almost becomes overwhelming. It's so big and it's so deep. You know, the average person who might be listening to the show goes, wow, that's a lot to handle.
Well, let's talk to Joe Average, because, you know, when you look at this, you know, at first you think, well, you know, what does this have to do with me? It's not bothering me. In fact, I talk to people. I have clients in my insurance business where, you know, we've known each other long enough that we say, well, what's going on, Joan? And I tell them, you know. And I say, well, you know, that's just, you know, I kind of know, but I just want to live my life and be happy. I don't want to deal with any of that. So.
Okay. So let's talk about what it is for 30 seconds or so.
Okay. Well, it has a name, Sustainable Development. It's an agenda, and it is all-encompassing. It affects every aspect of our lives, and that's the name of it. And then just when we come back, we'll explain the different ways that it affects each of our lives so that the average person, and even if the listener already knows this because mm-hmm. they've heard it, like my daughter says, Mom, I've heard it before.
Right.
At least, you know, we'll develop talking points that you can take it to your next door neighbor and explain it to your neighbor.
Yeah, well, you know, get your neighbor on the phone, have them listen to the radio or check it out on the internet. We'll be right back.
The agenda is set. Santa Cruz County government has determined that your bumper-to-bumper commute on Highway 1 is a good idea. Your car is an environmental hazard, and they have a plan to clean it up. I'll be right back.
You are listening to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty.
In September of 1997, the final draft of a very ambitious 100-page document was submitted locally to the leaders of Santa Cruz County government. the Board of Supervisors on the county level, and the mayors and their councils on the city level, were all presented with and asked to endorse a policy planning guide called Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21, a sustainable community action plan, our agenda for the 21st century. Unfortunately, for those of us who live here, this plan was endorsed. As a matter of fact, it was not only endorsed, it was adopted, embraced, and is now in a full implementation phase by county planning and government. If you are listening on your car radio, crawling in gridlock over highways 1 and 17, you are experiencing the very real-world application of Agenda 21. Those stop-and-go bottlenecks that you're dealing with every day are intentional. They are designed to socially engineer you away from your car and into alternative modes of transportation. The fact that Santa Cruz County government expects traffic congestion to become so intolerable that within a few short years, their more suitable, non-polluting modes of transportation will be used is now clear and understood by many. Their desired state is written in Santa Cruz County Local Agenda 21. It says,
public subsidies are to be shifted from funding highway construction, road maintenance, policing traffic, and publicly funded parking to developing and promoting transportation alternatives.
One of the many goals in the Agenda 21 chapter on transportation is
increase public awareness about personal and societal transportation choices, including walking, bicycling, rail, and bus use.
How effective are we at shopping and carrying home groceries while pedaling our bicycles, riding a new coastal train, or navigating from one county bus transfer to another? To the average American family of four, good luck. Enough of this nonsense. We need to widen Highway 1, and we need to begin construction now. If we allow the planners to do nothing, the people of Santa Cruz County will suffer, in that more and more time will be spent commuting to and from work, school, and everyday errands. That dividend pays off as less and less time spent with loved ones. In the pursuit of happiness, this is Florence Braden.
Welcome back. We're talking to geopolitical journalist Joan Peros about sustainable development, Agenda 21 on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Joan, you know, this audience is pretty knowledgeable.
Right.
You know, you hear a lot of people call in, and, you know, we invite you to call in at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. If you have a question or you run into something that we talk about, because I think what's important for people to know is that it's in your everyday life, whether you know it or not.
Well, it is. And going back to the average person, I'm like the average person in the sense that I work, I'm raising a family, and I like my peace and quiet and my comforts, you know, of the American life. And I don't have time for this, but I do it, you know. And so I'm just like the average person in that sense. So, again, I'd like to relate some talking points. And I think one of the foundational things that's important to understand about this, what I came across, for example, at the United Nations, at the Millennium Summit, when you go through all the documents, you come across what's called as the International Economic Order. There's another document that Stephen Rockefeller, who oversaw the writing of the Earth Charter, put me onto, and it's the Draft International Covenant on Environment and Development. And that talks about creating the international economic order, and in order to do that, transferring resources from the developed nations, that would be us, to the developing nations. So that's part of this international economic order. And shockingly enough, when you read other things like American legislation and you read the USA Patriot Act, you'll find references to the same thing. So the fun part is being able to connect all this. And I don't know if it's fun, but at least you're documenting and you're proving and you're coming up with a thread. And so, for example, in the USA Patriot Act, if you go to Title 3, Section 302, the Patriot Act, by the way, has less to do with terror than it has to do, well, it is about terror. It has less to do with terrorists than it has to do with this international economic order. And in this one section of the Patriot Act, it talks about, you know, setting up the safeguards for American financial institutions and protecting global financial and the trading systems. So, again, that's your global, your international economic order. Why is that embodied in the USA Patriot Act unless all of the laws that are being put on the books are being crafted to protect this? Well, the economy, it's money. It's you know, what we eat. It's, you know, how we feed ourselves. It's our very existence. It's how we live. And so, foundationally, this is about money. I mean, one component of it is about money, and that's a, and that's something that the average person can relate to. So, you know, when we talk about transferring resources to developing nations, then, I mean, do you know anybody that's out of work? I mean,
yeah.
You know, if we have our job, you know, it's comfortable and we don't want to go there. It's not a good thing to think about. It's not pleasant. It's, and people that have lost their jobs, you know, there's a little self-esteem involved there. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk about it, but we all know people. I was in Macy's buying pots and pans a year ago, and the guy selling them was a nuclear physicist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've met engineers that are selling cars. I have a friend who's an MBA in engineering, multilingual. He's bagging groceries. And these are horror stories. And another friend called today, and he's just laid off work. And because we're transferring our jobs offshore. And it's kind of like we're bleeding, and are we going to stop the bleeding, or is it intended for us to bleed to death until the middle class is gone?
Mm-hmm. How far, well, a couple things. Who's running the show, and how far down the road are we with all this?
We're a long way down the road. Mm-hmm. Everything's in place.
This has been going on for a long time.
Well, it has. You know, and it's something that's, you know, I mean, if you want to, you can take time frames, but I mean, you can go back all eternity and look at this struggle for the control of all of the wealth in the world and all of the power in the world, and the struggle between good and evil, you know, between God and Satan, and, you know, I mean, it's throughout all time. So, you know, pick your time frame. But I'd say, you know, just even in the last 100 years, with the establishment of the League of Nations, you know, an attempt at world government. You look at United Nations. Who's behind it, to name names? It's a hard thing to mm-hmm. do, but there are books that have been written. People have postulated. The political reality, you know, of where the strings are being pulled visibly is the United Nations. Mm-hmm. That's the seat of the one world government. But it's really a front organization, and that's kind of interesting because I've observed that behind that, there are very, very wealthy, powerful, invisible interests.
Mm-hmm.
I've read books, you know, that postulate that, you know, the British royal family, and certainly they're among some of the most wealthy in the world. There's a book called Circle of Intrigue that names about a dozen people. I mean, nobody knows exactly for sure, but there seems to be a real inner core,
mm-hmm.
and there are people that are not in charge, but they seem to be performing for those that are. People like Gorbachev.
Mm-hmm.
He's not running the show. He's a puppet.
Right.
Coffee and ale.
Big money, big business.
Exactly.
You know, you talked about how it's kind of been tried with, you know, League of Nations, the United Nations. It goes a bit way back. What is different about today and what's going on?
Well, that's a good question, and that's where it gets kind of scary, because today, with this explosion of technology, this explosion of developments in physiology and psychology, and the ability to manipulate and control people, I think it's been said that, you know, this is the third time, and they're not going to get it wrong this time.
Mm. Third time's the charm.
Third time's the charm. In South Africa, at the 10-year follow-up to the Rio conference. I was in an environmental law conference, and they were talking about assess, monitor, and control. Assess is you measure, you observe, you monitor, you keep track of, and then you control. So it's, you know, it's an articulated agenda. And I mean, all you have to do is drive through an intersection and look at all the cameras. And interestingly, I was at a United States Conference of Mayors when TRW, who's at the forefront of some of these technologies, was passing out a videotape, and I've watched that a few times. And I mean, there are people sitting in rooms just, you know, watching you on street corners, watching you wherever they have all these cameras positioned. And then there are the, you know, the retina scans and all the different technologies that are available now to identify you and to track you.
You know, I was looking at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz website in preparation to come here, and I was reading one of your pieces there that ended up tying itself to the UN Agenda 21 piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you read it, just on the surface, it all sounds really good, like good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's kind of a nice thing.
Yeah. Well, and what has been used by this group, they call it their central organizing principle, is the environment. And when I drive down the hill and I see the little deer off the side of the road, I mean, you know, I love the flowers and I love the animals and I love the fish. We all love that. And so it appeals to everybody. And on the surface, prima facie, people think that it's about the environment. It's just something to organize people in the collective, that everybody responds to it at gut level. But it's a dishonest scheme. And I guess if I could give an example, in Johannesburg, I was in a press briefing with Colin Powell, who was with the State Department, and just a few media people and the South African ambassador. And the ambassador was talking to John Turner, who's the Assistant Secretary of State, and I noticed that in the State Department briefings I'd been to earlier, that they were being attended by the head of the United States timber and forestry industry. They had a big, concern with all of this. And what was handed out to us at Colin Powell's briefing was a packet about these millions of acres in South Africa that were going to be locked up in a preserve to protect them. And I asked at this press briefing, I said, well, is this a debt for equity swap? And they looked at each other as like they would never have to answer this. And they said, well, you figure it out after you go to enough meetings. And they said, well, okay, it's okay, you can tell her. And so I says, well, we don't have this completely structured yet, but yes, we are going to take and lock this up in exchange for the debt of these African nations. But that's not the end of it. So who you have coming in that's going to be allowed to forest and take the resources out are just the very, very few huge multinational corporations. So,
you know, you're a journalist. You've been able to go to these meetings. You're one of the few people who talk about it.
Well, yeah, and there's some things that I haven't talked about.
Mm.
There are things that I haven't released, because you do have experiences.
Sure.
There's people that don't want you to talk. So, there are things that, I just haven't had the time to put together, to release. But
well, you always, the quote, mainstream media
mm-hmm.
never talks about these kinds of things.
Because they're controlled. They're controlled.
And always, but they're always, we are doing an investigative report, and I guess they don't investigate far enough.
Well, some of the things that come out are helpful, but it's primarily designed to blind the American public and to get them to think along a certain line. In other words, to reinforce this agenda. So you have to be able to see behind the smoke and mirrors.
Okay, well, we encourage you to give a call if you have a question or, you've had some kind of experience that you can relate to. It's 888-245-4237. It's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. We'll be right back.
While some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break, let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back, talking to Joan Parros about many things that concern you and your family and all of us here in the United States of America. You're listening to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Let's bring it local. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. How does it affect us locally?
Well, again, I was talking to a client and in the area of property rights. I have an insured that lives in the Silicon Valley, and he was wanting to build just a small granny unit. He has a large urban lot, a third of an acre, and going into the planning department to get a permit, they put so many restrictions, they made it so complicated, so difficult, that it just would have been practically impossible. It would have been prohibitively expensive to build on this property. But at the same time, across the street from him, they have just constructed 31 of these high-density sustainable units.
Welcome back to the network. Oh, we're going to another break. I'm sorry. Welcome back, the rest of the network. We're talking to Joan Parros. We're talking a little bit about what's going on locally with all of this stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, everybody around the country, we drive around now, and we're starting to be able to see it. So when I first started to talk about this 8 years ago, you didn't see any of these things. But now you just drive across a town or across towns, and you see this high-density housing. And this is the start of what they call the eco-villages, which are these self-contained neighborhoods where your work is supposed to be, and you live upstairs. It's just extremely high-density. And the reason for that is to be able to control people better, because eventually when they get us out of their cars, that's another thing, of course, they don't widen the freeways, but they put in the bike paths, they remove parking, they remove roadway for cars, because if you read one of the backbone documents that supports this, what you find is they call unsustainable is cars. So we see cars being impacted. That's what's behind the drive to decrease emissions from factories and automobiles and to get us out of our cars. Wildfires. I mean, we all hear about wildfires. Why are we having so many wildfires? And, you know, this is sad but true. It's deliberate because if you can force people out of these rural areas, out of the hills, then you lock them up in the eco-villages. And the reason that we're having the wildfires is because the so-called sustainable forestry practices have forced forestry management that allows the buildup of the skags, all the trees, all the brush, everything stays on the ground. It's a horrendous fire fuel load. And it's just a matter of time before that burns and you have these devastating forest fires. And then when you come behind, some people will never be able to rebuild because the building codes have been changed to such, or the zoning has been changed that you're not allowed to rebuild if your house burns to the ground. That's one of the cute tricks of the global elite. The surveillance we've talked about, open space by government. I was talking to a friend who was saying, oh, but isn't the open space wonderful? We get to have all these parks and things. And I said, well, yeah, but I said, where I am, the open space isn't being managed. And again, we have fire fuel that's out of control, the loads.
Well, you're locked out of it. You can't even walk on it.
And you are locked out of it, exactly. But we're lied to. You know, we're told it's for, you know, our posterity. It's for our children, for the future. It's not true. And she said, well, yes, but I'd rather have it in the government's hands than private hands. And I said, well, you think about it, you know, the individual that owns the property, if they don't take care of it, they're not going to, you know, gain or benefit by it. Whereas with government, I mean, do you like what they've done with Social Security? I mean, let's look at the record, you know, track record of government.
Yeah, you mentioned the future and our children, and when I was on the website looking at it, there's a whole plan about kids.
Yes. Well, our children are being indoctrinated. They're not being educated in the schools anymore. They're being dumbed down. And we know that it's horrendous in the public schools. But I have two kids that we, after 7.5 years of homeschooling, have put into a Christian school. And I don't know if people just aren't aware of what's going on, but I've just been kind of shocked at how everybody seems to buy into the agenda. So, for example, volunteerism. Most people, because I haven't heard it discussed, just, I mean, volunteerism's great. I've done it all my life. And we always, you know, I think everybody probably thinks that's a great thing to do. But do you know that the whole volunteerism agenda is documented at the United Nations? I mean, I think it was 1980 that they came out with an edict that we're going to have the International Year of Volunteers, and everybody will be coerced into volunteering. In fact, we had this discussion at the Millennium Summit. I was in, you know, the meeting for the volunteers. And I said, well, there's a line that you cross when, you know, you do it of your own free will, and you're forcing somebody. It's no longer volunteerism. And then what's tied to that are grants. The company that I work for sends me quarterly these sheets that they want me to fill out for my volunteer hours, you know, because it really is assessed, it's monitored, and it's controlled. So
even the kids now, there's mandatory
volunteerism. So, you know, again, on the surface, we think that's a good thing, but is it something that needs to be dictated by a global body? That's the tune that they're dancing to. There's a document called the Global Compact, and it's a UN document that dictates how businesses are to perform, and they are required to perform volunteerism and to record the hours and to report them back.
Yeah, and even in the schools, I've, you know, heard people talk on this program that, you know, we think that the curriculum's all kind of open and it's the best curriculum, but it's kind of just like one handed down curriculum that teaches all of what you're talking about.
Well, unfortunately, our children are being turned into automatons to work for the collective estate.
All right, well, we'll talk more right after this break.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. mounting limitations on, or even loss of your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. We're talking to Joan Paris about Agenda 21 and sustainable development and the manipulation of our kids and all this stuff that's going on. That, you know, I know for, like I said, you know, for me it was, oh yeah, this can't be possible. And the more I, you know, heard you guys talk, the more kind of things start tying together. And if you pay attention,
right,
you see it.
Right, and that's the great thing is when your eyes are opened, then and you have to prove it for yourself, like I did, because it's just so bizarre that you don't want to believe it, but you know, I just got Dr. Stan's September newsletter today, and talking about education and how our kids are being manipulated, he has some really great quotes in here, and one of them's from Bertrand Russell about, you know, and this was decades ago, he said that education should aim at destroying free will so that after pupils have left school, they'll be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. This is the kind of thing that's taking place in the classroom, and of course he was involved with the occultists and the elite that are, you know, pushing this agenda forward today. And it was Bertrand Russell that also talked about Fichte, who laid down that education should aim at destroying free will. And he said that in the future, and here we are in the future, that diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. So, you know, when we ask, well, how's this affecting us today? You know, is there an agenda to dumb people down? I mean, he's predicted or knew that they would be developing these things, injections. And I think of the injections that people receive that have Tamiflu, that have mercury in them, what that does to the brain. I look at the additives that they're putting into food, the aspartame and the tumors and the cancer that that's causing and a whole host of problems. With fluoride in the water, you know, that lowers IQ. And it depresses fertility. I mean, why are they doing that?
I have kids in school, and you're always, you know, it's all about what's for the group, not for the individual.
Well, exactly. And again, going back to a press conference at the in Johannesburg, the Earth Summit, I asked the vice chair of an organization called ICLE, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, that is this organization between the global body and our local governments that helps them implement this sustainable development agenda. And I asked him, I said, well, how does the sustainable development agenda play out against the liberties that are contained in the Constitution and Bill of Rights? And he says, well, you know, the individual freedoms are going to have to take a back seat to the collective. So you're exactly right. And these people unashamedly will articulate that. Of course, you know, there are not too many people like me there. As far as they know, I'm one of them. But yeah.
You know, I've heard you talk, and before we were doing the program, we talked, and there's a lot of spirituality in what you talk about.
Right.
Expand on that.
You know, I guess one of the things that just hit me between the eyes is a lot of press conferences that I've been in with Gorbachev. And Gorbachev always describes the Earth Charter as a new religion. And he said that it's a new set of 10 to 15 commandments. And this is, I was there at the Earth Conference in 97 when it was unveiled by Rockefeller. And at that time they hadn't, you know, finalized it, but it was a sheet of paper, and it was 10 to 15 new commandments, like Gorbachev calls it. And he said that in that paradigm, man is no better than, and in some cases he's less important than, the rocks,
mm-hmm.
and the bugs and the trees and the animals. And so here you get this pantheistic, this spiritual, this one world religion, this view that takes everything that's in the Judeo-Christian ethic, that's everything in the scriptures, and perverts it. It just reverses it. And you can go, I guarantee you that you can go through every agenda that's here, and it's an affront or an abomination to Christianity or to Judaism. And I don't know that much about Islam, but probably to Islam. In fact, we talked about the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that's 1,100 pages of what is unsustainable. And when you get towards the back of this tome, it'll tell you that Christianity and the whole Judeo-Christian ethic is unsustainable. We're slated for obsolescence. So, you know, if you adhere to any of those type of spiritual values, you probably ought to pay attention, because it's extermination time. I mean, it was done to the Jews. It was, it's done to the Christians all the time. It's just not expressed in the controlled media. But on page 838 of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, it talks about a worldview that's characterized by the denial of sacred attributes in nature. Well, Earth Charter Sustainable Development is based on this worship of the creation and sacred attributes in nature. And it says that there's a characteristic that has its roots in Greek philosophy and became firmly established about 2,000 years with the Judeo-Christian Islamic religious tradition. So it specifically is targeting those spiritual views as being unsustainable. So everything is being done gradually, but you need to know where it's going, and that's the big picture. And it goes on to, you know, put down those religions and condemning. It says especially Christianity has gone the farthest in setting humans apart from nature and embracing a value system that has supposedly converted the world into a warehouse. But, you know, when you read Genesis, God commands man to be a good steward of the earth. And that's a concept of private property. The individual is going to have to take care of his private property. Otherwise, it's not going to serve him. It's going to cost him. And so here you have this whole worldview that really hates God, that hates His Word. And take volunteerism for an example. The Bible tells us to, you know, Christ says, I command you to love one another as I have loved you. It commands us to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to visit the sick, to visit those in prison, to take care of the widow and the orphan. I mean, that's the Word of God. And it's amazing, but when you think about the institutionalization of volunteerism, here you have this world body trying to institutionalize their own forms of, you know, of spirituality. And man is not perfect. Man can never match up to what's in the Scriptures. But this is what they're trying to do. And it takes some very perverted forms. Just for an example, look at Darfur. Look at Rwanda. Here we have this international body that's supposedly about ending wars and taking care of people. But there was an article this week in the New York Times by Romeo Dallaire, who was the general in Rwanda, who was on the phone watching these massacres happening and the UN refusing to provide him any help. And he said, you know, it's Rwanda all over again in Darfur. So why do we pay a third of the UN's general budget, the United States? And why does the United States pay 50% of the budget for the so-called special projects, these types of things? To its credit, we've called this a massacre, but the United Nations is doing nothing. And so you have all of this dialogue or all of this rhetoric on one side, but nothing happening on the other side. So you just have to step back and look at it and don't pay attention to what they're telling you, but look and see what they're doing.
Are the religious leadership knowledgeable about what's going on? I don't hear about anything like this in our churches.
Well, I get really disgusted and upset with the churches because the pastorate seems to be ignorant for the most part, or else they're buying in to the methods of the new spirituality. In a workshop with Stephen Rockefeller at the Millennium Summit, he was talking about religion, and they were handing out booklets of how churches can implement the environmental agenda. Mm-hmm. And certainly there's so many churches that are implementing it, some wittingly and some unwittingly. But I think that's the problem, because the churches need to be the ones that are, you know, doing, you know, the charitable works, and not a world government that's coercing people. We're just headed into, you know, really horrific times with the elimination of the middle class. You're going to have the serfs and the elite, and I mean, the churches are, I think of them as like so full of holes. They're like Swiss cheese with all of this that's crept into the churches. And I think it's, again, you know, there's a pride issue. Leaders don't want to listen because they probably think they know it all. Yeah. They can figure it out. Or maybe there's an element that, you know, I don't want to know. I don't know what it is, but it's really sad because the churches have just really, really, they're failing.
Well, we have a caller on the line. We have Daniel from Santa Cruz. Welcome, Daniel.
Yeah, good evening. Yeah, getting back to the local level, I mean, I see these community plans popping up all over, and it's become clear to many of us that this is how they're implementing this global agenda on the local level. Could Joan comment on that?
Well, you're exactly right, Dan. All through the internet, you find all these plans and training for these local citizen type meetings, and they're called visioning conferences or you know, planning conferences,
performance review committees.
And so they take the form of, you know, a few people coming together that want to implement this agenda and passing it off as a collaborative, you know, effort that's supposed to represent everybody, when in fact it doesn't. Anybody that's opposed to this or that stands up generally drives these movements underground so that anybody that's opposed to the way it's being done cannot participate in it, because they're not performed according to Robert's Rules of Order. They're not being conducted by duly elected representatives who are accountable to the people, but they're being headed in a lot of cases by people from the planning department. We just saw that here recently with the trash issue. And, I talked to a neighbor who teaches at Stanford, and of course we were concerned about the dump that they were talking about placing close to our home. And she said, well, she says, I've heard the other professors talking that this is a technique that's used to manipulate populations where, you disturb them with something and then you can, manipulate them to your agenda. And what that's come out of that here locally is a push toward, alternatives in trash management. And the alternative organizations are very heavily bent on controlling management of waste in your home, whether it's, the amount of water you use to flush your toilet or, recycling, just, lots of ways to control people. I don't know why these people are such control freaks, but that's what it's about.
I was listening to one of the other radio... Oh, go ahead, Daniel, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was listening to one of the other radio programs that was on here, and they were talking about a lot of it is just about control. These people have so much money that... It's not really about the money. It's about, we're superior and we're going to tell you silly people what to do.
Well, it was all I could do to keep from laughing at the Millennium Summit when Stephen Rockefeller was up in front of this workshop saying, well, we don't have any money, to get the Earth Charter implemented. So, we really need, people to, help us collect money to pay for this. And I'm like, oh, sure. with the wealthiest families in the world. With money tied up in foundations. And in fact, these things a lot of times are implemented through these public-private partnerships, which once you put the government force behind a project, you really have a pretty difficult entity to deal with, and that's how they're doing a lot of it.
Dan, you have another question?
Yeah, I noticed in many of these local community plans, they use this expression, assess and monitor all over the place. And I've noticed, on the global documents, it'll say assess and monitor and control. So I guess the control aspect's going to come down the road after they get these things implemented.
Police state.
Yeah.
And all that's being, it's already been set up and implemented in legislation like the Patriot Act. All the means are there to control people. National Emergency Health Powers Act allows the government to burn your property if you won't be, vaccinated for certain biological diseases that could come our way that have been created in laboratories and it can be, spread to the population. I mean, just,
wow.
the plagues are there in the laboratories ready to be unleashed on people.
In other words, we're in the box, but we just haven't found the walls yet.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it, Daniel.
I think you answered my question.
Thank you, Daniel.
How are we going to stop it?
Well, what I wanted to ask is, again, there's a lot of information there. You're talking about documents that are, that document is, 1,000 pages or 800 pages or whatever.
1,100
pages. For the person who's going, I have, because you get a sense. You get a gut sense that
Right. Something's
not right. Where are some places where, people can get a quick study, where they're not going to get overwhelmed and not be able to do that or feel paralyzed to do anything?
I believe that everybody has a place in this battle, and there's something that everybody can do. And the first thing you have to do is get educated on what's happening. And the person that's listening knows there is a problem, like you say, and they're looking for what's wrong. Most people have access to the internet, whether in their home or the library, and have somebody show you how to do a search engine, and just go type in. Education, put in the name of, whoever's involved with an educational project, and you can get the information, and then just stick to whatever your local, your area of interest is, whether it's that town hall meeting, whether it's what's going on in your kid's school, whatever interests you, because this agenda is so pervasive, it affects every single aspect of your life. And if you love yourself and your way of life, if you love your children, if you love your wife, your husband, if you love your grandchildren, you know, you got to love somebody. You know, do it for them, because, you know, we can all play a part just by, you know, being educated and being involved. The Freedom 21 website, go to the Freedom 21, Radio Liberty, lots of organizations out there.
And I know that the Freedom 21 folks have a DVD out. We'll tell you more about it after this break. We're back? All right. You know, I understand that there's a DVD that the Freedom 21 folks have that's very comprehensive, you know, about learning, kind of like a cliff notes of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to the Freedom21SantaCruz.net website and find out more about that. And you talk a lot all over the place. So what if someone's interested in getting a hold of you? Do you have your own website?
You know, people ask me that a lot, and I haven't set up a website. But
so you're busy fighting a fight.
But I do. I do like to get out and talk to different groups, and I'm always happy to do that. I'm busy, but...
When you're out talking to groups, what are some of the regular questions that you hear from people?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure at first they can't believe it. They're like, wow, really? Is that bad?
People just tend to get overwhelmed. I don't know. As far as what people ask, you know, well, what can I do about it? I guess it's more of like a, you know, a discouragement. And so I guess it's really important just to know that you can do a lot. I think the worst thing that any of us can do, there's a scripture from Isaiah that talks about, you know, the person that never opened their mouth with even a peep. You just have to open your mouth and speak out. And, you know, and it's not fun, it's not easy, but people will respect you for it. You'll learn to articulate the issues. People will have questions. You'll find out, you know, what their questions are, and you'll be prepared to explain better to people what the agenda is. And so what was...
Oh, what else I was going to ask you was that there's some differences being made. I mean, Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is doing a lot. So there is some movement in the positive.
Well, there definitely is. And so I guess it's just, you know, that responsibility of everybody doing something, because there's, you know, there's been this conspiracy of silence, and those who are, what's that quotation where you're guilty of sins of omission are as bad as sins of commission. And if you keep your mouth shut and you don't say anything, then you're really responsible if you have any kind of knowledge of what's going on or what's wrong, then you're equally guilty. And I've just made a commitment not to keep my mouth shut, because it's a responsibility.
Well, welcome back to the rest of the network. We're talking to Joan Paris. We've just been talking about, you know, there are some positive things being done. I was on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz website, and on one of the articles, there was at one of those conferences, there was actually some progress into, like, putting a small stop in some of the progress of the Agenda 21 movement.
Exactly. There are people from all around the country that, like you say, are aware that things aren't right. People in local government, people on boards that are making a difference in the way, you know, property rights are handled. People are speaking out. It is making a difference. Other people are getting informed. And it's kind of this whole thing of critical mass, too, that enough people are aware and understand what some of the issues are, that they're able to articulate it and willing to fight for the preservation of our constitutional republic. I mean, you can ask people, you know, do they want a constitutional republic or a democracy? And most people don't know the difference. A democracy is like the Lord of the Flies, where you have these dirty little boys, you know, they're going to, you know, kill everybody, just, you know, the majority to get what they want. And the constitutional republic, which is what we are, and there's a huge difference, is a set of laws that we all have to abide by, so there's no tyranny of the majority over the minority. So just understanding things like that, because our children are not being taught in school about our Constitution or Bill of Rights.
We got a couple of callers on the line. Let's get Bill on right away here. Bill, what's your question?
Hi, I apologize if this is a bit off topic, but I really wanted to ask this. I'm in Idaho, and I've heard that possibly a rumor that California schools this week will be notifying the federal government with a list of names from high schools of juniors and seniors regarding possible master draft list.
You know, my children are not in public schools, Bill, but that's an excellent question. I was at a private school meeting Monday night where it was stated that in order to apply for, I think it's any of the public colleges, you cannot apply without registering for the draft. And I may be off on some of the nuances, but there is something to do with education or scholarships or registering for public colleges that you're unable to do it without registering for the draft.
Well, thanks, Bill. Keep us up on that one. And we also now have Gloria from Spokane.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment, Joan. I'm trying to educate people up here in the Spokane area, and I'm using that draft, Understanding Agenda 21 and Sustainable Development. And then I've done my own research, and Washington State, by executive order by our governor, was declared a sustainable Washington. And so they're following these mandates.
Yes.
And then also our town, Spokane, is sustainable Spokane, and it's following the three E's.
Yes.
That have been mentioned. And so I think it's important that people at first understand the big umbrella, the Agenda 21. And, for example, just in the first chapter of that, it mentions the international trade. And I think it's very critical that people go to that document and look at the full document and kind of just zip through it. And then also read your sustainable Freedom 21's handout on the sustainable Agenda 21, and then start, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in their own community, and just start looking at their newspaper. And then after they understand the big picture, they'll start seeing things and putting it all together. Oh my gosh, yes, they are putting in mixed use housing, and they're putting retail on
right.
The bottom stories. And you just read about this in Spokane every day, and just tremendous building is happening here. They're having these local meetings where, you know, these visioning councils. I mean, it's just right out of what has happened in your own community.
Well, thanks so much, Gloria. We're about out of time here, and we want to thank Joan Paris and everybody who called, and thank you for your input on this. So
great job, Gloria.
Yeah, well, that's how you do it, right? That's
right.
How you do it. This is the Freedom 21 radio program, and get more information from Freedom21SantaCruz.net. Again, thanks, Joan. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Roy.
views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Hello, everybody. I'm Susan McLaughlin here on Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. And today's show should be of interest to everyone who travels on Highway 1 and even of interest to people who aren't driving around Santa Cruz County. We have a measure called Measure J. It's a sales tax proposal to widen Highway 1, and it's going to appear on our November ballot. On today's show, you'll get a chance to hear a little bit about this measure and its implications. The Measure J is not on the ballot precisely and exactly to add an extra lane to our highways here, but there are a number of additional programs that are tied into Measure J that will be funded if the sales tax is passed. And once those programs get funded, you will see a pretty major change in Santa Cruz County in the way we go about our daily business and the way we go about traveling in Santa Cruz County. Now, we have a guest this evening. Some of you might already know Jeannie Soderman. She is a researcher and an international traveler. She has attended the UN Millennium Summit and the State of the World Forum in New York. And she's on the air tonight to give us an update and comment on the Measure J transportation project and its implications for us here in Santa Cruz County. We're very pleased to bring her knowledge of our local government to this show.
Good evening, Susan. You're a little bit soft. Can you hear me?
I can hear you pretty well.
Okay. If you could tone up your end a little better.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if folks haven't heard me on the radio with Dr. Stan before, I'm just a country girl from New England and came into California about 35 years ago and a wife, a mother, and was a businesswoman for over 20 years. And I'm an environmentalist, and I joined three environmental organizations, Nature Conservancy, Greenpeace, and World Wildlife Fund. And about, I think it was, near 11 years ago, I happened to turn the radio on in the afternoon, and Dr. Stan was talking regarding current issues. And I thought to myself, well, that sounds a little way off. And I'm not sure if I want to listen to him, but there was a grain of truth in what Dr. Stan was saying. And so I listened to his whole program, and that's when I started searching for the truth, what the environmental program, what it really was about. So there again is, I've researched for over 11 years, and I believe I have found the blueprint for what it's all about.
Well, Jeannie, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we can talk more about this environmental agenda and what it means to transportation in this country. You're listening to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty. We'll be right back.
While some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break, let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty. My name is Susan McLaughlin. I'm here tonight talking about Measure J in Santa Cruz County and also the implications that this seemingly innocent transportation measure that will be on our November ballot has for the people that live in this county. And people who live across the country might recognize what's happening here in Santa Cruz County and see evidence of the same sorts of manipulation of the public in their own counties. Now, in the course of a few decades, it's really remarkable how attitudes can change about roads. A very obvious change in our roads and highways is how, especially in Santa Cruz County, they're not cared for like they used to be cared for. The roads used to be pretty decent. Their potholes were kept in check. There were regular maintenance projects done on the highways. Every summer you would see Caltrans or the county roads people out working on roads, making sure that they were ready for the winter rains and that they wouldn't fall apart during the winter rains. Now, something has changed since then, and the roads in this county have pretty much become impassable. We have potholes everywhere. We have pavement that's alligatoring and breaking apart. We have weeds and shrubbery growing up through the cracks in our roads. They look decrepit, and they're terrible to drive on. And one of the worst highways in the whole state is Highway 1 here in Santa Cruz County. And it is so over capacity with the number of people who live on the county and are trying to drive on it, that it's virtually impossible to travel anywhere during commute hours and make decent time. Jeannie, I know in some of your research you've discovered that making people uncomfortable to be in their cars and making it hard for them to travel is something that is being done on purpose.
Well, most definitely. But I want to say to the listeners, what's happening here in Santa Cruz County, California, is happening or will happen or has happened in your area where you are living in the United States. And not only in the United States, but throughout the world. And yes, the goal is to get we the people out of cars. And of course, that's one of our freedoms, freedom of mobility, in order to get in the car and go wherever you'd like. You could drive up to Alaska, you could drive to the East Coast, but that's one of our freedoms.
You know, I can remember being taught in a high school civics class that roads are laid out to enable people to travel for profit, pleasure, and freely move goods in support of commerce. Now, that being said, you need a well-maintained road so that people can go places for their business, to get to work, for a pleasure, to go out to dinner or to a movie or to go to Alaska and visit a relative, and to conduct commerce. And in order to have a prosperous and free society, highways and roads that are well-maintained and have the capacity to support the population are a requirement.
Yes. And I went to a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce of Aptos, and this was 2 weeks ago. And my supervisor, Ellen Perry, was there, and she was talking about Measure J. And I'm going to go back to Measure J because that ties in with the environmental movement. At the Chamber of Commerce meeting, it was a breakfast meeting, Ellen Peary, our supervisor, was talking about how wonderful Measure J was, meaning that we, through Measure J, were going to relieve congestion on the highway, Highway 1. And she did her prepared speech, and afterwards, she was answering questions from the audience, and this is where you catch them, when they're not doing the regular prepared speech. And one man who had lived in Europe said, well, I don't understand. You have this $577 million initiative on the ballot coming up in November, and in Europe, we don't need all this infrastructure. What we have is informational computers that will get the cars on the freeway and off the freeway efficiently. And have you ever thought of that, Supervisor Perry? Well, no, we haven't, she answered. But she did say one thing that was very critical to understand what our commissioners and board of supervisors are doing. She said, if we can pass this Measure J and add one more lane to the freeway, we can get the people out of their cars. Astounding statement.
So it's her stated agenda to get people out of cars and not driving anywhere anymore.
Exactly.
Now, I was poking around today and looking up our Santa Cruz Regional Transportation Council, and they, of course, have written this Measure J, and I was just poking around to see what they had on their website about Measure J. It's really interesting for the people of Santa Cruz County to note that in 1986, the stated top priority project for the Santa Cruz Regional Transportation Council was to widen Highway 1. Now, how long ago was 1986? You know, if you think about how they have lied to the people of Santa Cruz County, obviously it's not a priority for them to widen Highway 1. And now they're coming up with this Measure J, which widens Highway 1, but only for a certain group of people, because the lanes that they're going to be adding to the freeway to make it wider are only going to be drivable by high occupancy vehicles or buses, things like that. So even though they say they're going to widen the road, it's not for the common benefit. It's only for the benefit of the few. And just the fact of the matter that it's been almost 20 years, 18 years, since their top priority was made to widen the highway, And they're telling us now it's going to be 20 more years before the job gets done. That's obfuscating.
Can you imagine the chaos in the next 20 years of them widening the extra free the lane on the freeway on both sides? And this is one of the techniques to get us out of the cars. There's an also very important goal they have that is super important, and that is their right to buy the right-of-way beside the Union Pacific Railway.
Now,
that is the prize.
Yes, that is actually where nearly half of the funds from this tax are going to go. And it was claimed to be a goal of our local Agenda 21 plan that was developed in the early 90s to get people off of the freeway and into the railway. And they actually have got funding to purchase the rail lines from Southern...
Union Pacific?
Yeah, Union Pacific. And with this Measure J, they'll be able to buy, actually condemn private property, because there's a lot of backyards that butt up against the railway tracks. They'll be able to condemn this property all up and down the rail lines and turn it into a pedestrian bicycle pathway. So they will end up with a huge chunk of real estate that is a main artery for Santa Cruz County. It will be like an artery from your heart. It's it goes the full length of the county, very nearly, and is in prime real estate areas, and the county is going to take possession of this if Measure J passes.
Well, right now they say this particular, they want to put a passenger tourist train on the railroad tracks, and it will only go for 6 miles, which is only a part of the railroad tracks that surround Monterey Bay. They are actually lying, because in the local Agenda 21 plan that the Board of Supervisors adopted in 1997, it does say they want ultra-light passenger rail service from Santa Cruz to way to Watsonville.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have that in their documentation already, but they're not telling us the truth that they want to expand it. There's a wonderful website, and I wish everyone would go to it, because this really tells the story. And it's www.soultrain, and that's spelled S as in Sam, O L T as in Tom, R A I N dot I T G O. .com, and that goes to Sustainable Monterey Bay. This is a non-profit sustainable community development team, and these are the ones that are behind the high density cluster transit eco villages. And it actually says in their website that these transit eco villages will be built along the Union Pacific Rail Corridor between Santa Cruz and Monterey.
Well, now, I have a letter here from Lisa Francione, who is part of the Soul Train organization, and we're going to take a break, and I'd like to come back and tell people what she wrote to our county commissioners to entice them to add her project and a number of other projects to Measure J, to be funded by the sales tax. So if you are listening on the computer, you can go to www.freedom21santacruz.com/radio and see some articles that we've posted about Measure J and sustainable transportation. If you're not, keep listening, and we'll be back after a quick break.
Pa
policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. After spearheading efforts to implement the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda in Santa Cruz, California, Congressman Sam Farr wrote,
"I am writing to congratulate you, the Advisory Board, and the Action Santa Cruz County Coalition for completing the local Agenda 21 Action Plan."
Congressman Sam Farr then wrote,
"The local Agenda 21 Action Plan not only has local significance, it also will have regional and national impacts. As you know, the President's Council on Sustainable Development is beginning Phase 3 of its work, with an emphasis on sustainable communities."
Sam Farr continued,
"I have been spearheading a similar effort to develop a process of sustainable development planning for the entire region."
So why does Sam Farr now say he's never heard of United Nations Agenda 21?
Yes, Congressman Farr, I'd like your my name's Daniel Beckett. I'd like your comments on the United Nations Agenda 21 program that you're implementing here. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But you endorsed it, sir. I have your paperwork.
United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 21. If there's nothing to hide, why does Sam now deny it? This has been a public service question posed by Freedom 21 Santa Cruz at freedom21santacruz.net, inviting you to advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century. For more information about how you can advance the cause of freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. This is Susan McLaughlin on Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty. I'm talking with Jeannie Soderman tonight, and we've been discussing a local ballot measure, Measure J, but it's a ballot measure that ties into a much bigger picture. Jeannie, before the break, you mentioned Sustainable Monterey, and I have a letter from a Lisa Francione who works for the Saltrain company you're talking about. She says that in order to get any increase in sales tax to fund transportation projects, there is only one option. The commission must distribute the money in a way that gives more to other projects besides widening Highway 1. So here we have a person who is not a citizen of Santa Cruz County. She is trying to influence our county commissioners to add projects to the Highway 1 sales tax fund that will especially benefit her. She goes on to say that in order to get the Highway 1 widening proposition passed, the commission will have to convince enough voters to pass it. So they will need to see that there are other projects like commuter rail, and she mentions Soul Train in particular, as projects that will get enough people interested to pass the measure. She also says that she has a huge community support base for her Soul Train project, and she can guarantee the commissioners a big block of votes if they add the Soul Train or rail projects to the Highway 1 transportation proposition. Now, it's a little concerning for people who don't live in Santa Cruz County to be trying to sway our supervisors and our county commissions to add projects that we pay for with our sales tax into any bond measures that we vote for. And another worrisome problem is the fact that we in Santa Cruz County have a hard time trusting our elected officials to actually use the money that they obtain through these bond measures. For example, in Santa Cruz County, in the late 1950s, a bond was passed, a 30-year bond, that would pay for a reservoir up above Santa Cruz County to provide abundant water for all. And at the end of the 30 years, when the bond had been completely paid and the city had all the money they needed to build the reservoir, someone came in and said that there was a endangered snail in the area that the reservoir was to be built, and the bond was passed for nothing because the project was canned at that point. It turns out that the snail doesn't exist. It was a fake endangered species, and no one knows what happened to the money. So they took 30 years of a sales tax and spent it somewhere, but nobody that I've contacted in the Santa Cruz city and county government seems to know where this bond money went. And I wouldn't be surprised if the same kind of thing happened with these Highway 1 widening funds, because if you're in a project that's going to take 20 years to do, and you've got 8 or 10 other projects that you're funding with this money, how much do you want to bet, Jeannie, that they spend all the money on these other projects?
Well, it's the Santa Cruz County supervisors that actually have complete control of the money mm-hmm. and how it's to be spent. Now, I'm looking at Measure J, and, of course, about two-thirds of it, 63%, goes to carpool bus lanes on Highway 1. Well, that's not going to help the ordinary commuter.
Not at all.
But then they have new bike pedestrian bridges. They're going to put bridges over the highway. People are going to walk over the highway and ride their bikes. They're going to buy express buses, park and ride lots. You drive to the parking lot, and then you take buses or a train.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this is trying to get us out of the car. There's one hook here I'm very concerned about, and we have a lot of seniors here in Santa Cruz County. It's $23 million, 4% going to senior and disabled transportation. And I can see the seniors looking at it and say, oh, well, I can get to the pharmacy or to the hospital for tests, or you can bring me shopping. But they will vote for it because it helps the seniors and the disabled.
So it's really not a proposition for the common good, but it's really a special projects proposition for a limited group of people.
It's how to get votes. That's mm-hmm. what it's put in there for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Scott Kennedy, most Marxist progressive person down in Santa Cruz City Council, is for it. And you wonder, why is this Marxist for this particular initiative? Well, it's a half-cent sales tax for 30 years. They want to strap it on our backs for 30 years. It's totally unthinkable. Then they have the Watsonville-Pajaro train station, and this is the beginning of the end. Because they plan already on the design document, there's about 9 platforms, train platforms, they plan to build. And that's going to be in Santa Cruz, Seacliff, Seascape, Aptos Village. Oh, Aptos Village is going through a village plan now, and they are right beside the forest of Nisene Marks State Park. That is actually a United Nations managed park, and Aptos Village is going to be heavily controlled by the National Park Service. And so what we have is this eco-villages being built. And there's another website. Actually, it's the same. It's soultrain.itogo.com. And you would not believe this. They talk about airspace. And it says, well, people own their land. They own three things. They own the mineral rights, the land rights, and the air rights. And so they're thinking about buying. These people at construction companies are going to buy the air rights on the land. And a lot of these eco-villages are going to be built over garages or empty parcels. Now, Susan, that gets into the housing draft element. I don't know if you've looked at that.
You know, Jeannie, I have. And we've actually got a caller on the line. I'd like to take the call.
Okay.
Daniel?
Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you this evening?
Very fine, thank you. Yeah, regarding the financial end of this Measure J, I just recently heard an elected official on the radio, and he was talking about that, and I guess it was maybe 5 years ago, the estimate for this highway widening was $125 million. And I realize that, you know, costs have gone up a little bit, but I'm in construction, and certainly the costs have not nearly tripled in that time. And I'm wondering, you know, they say this $368 million is all earmarked just for the highway widening, but I think there's a little more going on than just the highway widening with that chunk of the money.
Well, they do say that there's a contingency fund in there, and they don't have any description about how they might use the money for a contingency. So that's a pretty much open pocketbook sort of thing for the taxpayers of Santa Cruz County to deal with.
It sounds like it's about a $200 million thing that's going on, contingency plan.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to put bonds out, too. And whenever you have bonds, when you loan money from another entity, and who might it be? It could be the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. They're coming into all the projects, the water projects, the transportation projects. And so usually that will go up 2 to 3 times. So if you're borrowing, say, $500,000, it will be at least maybe $1 or $2 million. So there again, they're going to borrow the money, and they're going to strap it on our backs.
And like I said, we don't have a real good track record in Santa Cruz County of our officials actually using the money for the bonds we vote for to do what we think they're going to do with it.
And they're saying, I believe it's 12 years to do the construction work?
2017 is supposed to be finished, but there will be delays, and there's a magic number that the insiders use, 2020. That's why a lot of plans are called 2020 Vision, or 2025. But, Daniel, let me just go back to this draft housing element, because that's so important tied into the transportation. The housing element was mandated by a regional association. It's called AMBAG. It's an acronym for Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. And they mandated to Santa Cruz County, you have to build 10,000 affordable, units, housing units. Part of it will be affordable. And so,
taxpayer funded, in other words.
Yes. And this is where the state and the federal funds come in. And that's so important.
We're seeing money coming in from somewhere to develop these community plans that you're talking about, including the Aptos Community Plan. There's a community plan for every town in Santa Cruz County except Watsonville. They have Action Pajaro Valley Plan, which is a very all-encompassing proposal for the city of Watsonville.
That's a done deal. But anyway, all I know, do you ladies know how long it took them to build the Empire State Building?
How long?
It wasn't 20 years.
It was 1 year.
No kidding.
I'm not sure how long it took to build the Golden Gate Bridge. I think it was about 3 years. So I really don't know what these people are doing if it takes them 12 years.
Well, thank you, Daniel, for your call.
Thank you.
Getting back to this discussion about Aptos Village Plan and its affiliation with Measure J funds, if you've ever had a chance to take a look at the Plan Genie, you'll see that they will be increasing the density of Aptos enormously. And a lot of people who live in the Aptos area don't realize that their sleepy little village is about to become an urban center.
Yeah.
And it will be made possible by Measure J, because the high-density housing, transportation situation where you'll have to use a train to get to your job is part of the design of the Aptos Village Plan.
Right. Yeah, I've looked at that, Susan, on the Aptos Village Plan. And these transit eco-villages, and of course Aptos will have a railway station there, they will be called the working villages. In other words, these working villages will, the people that live in them will take the train and go to their work. It could be another village, another core area. But it's the same as what happened in Richland County in South Carolina.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because we were fortunate enough to speak with someone on the show who talked about the three types of villages, the working village, the sort of retirement village, and then the elite village where the people with money who don't have to work can go live.
Well, it gets worse than that, Susan, because what you have is the core area. This is your traditional kind of a high-scale village. And then on the outer area, you have your working village, and the people go in and they work in the core area. And then in the rural area, they have the non-employment village.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Now, this is people that don't have a job. And
this information can be found in that Richland County plan, can it not?
Yes, you could do a Google on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing county plan. And here again, we're going to have the same thing. In fact, the head of the Coastal Commission, Peter Douglas, if I remember his name right, said, you know, houses are going to get so expensive in Santa Cruz that the elitists will live by the ocean and the people that work for the elitists, and I would say the people that are getting government big paychecks, the people will travel to work for the elitists, and they will live outside of the area because the housing prices are so high.
Well, we're getting to a point here in Santa Cruz County where most people can't afford to purchase a home any longer. If you already own a home and you can sell it and purchase another one, that works. But, you know, most young people who've graduated from high school here and want to stay in the county are finding that they are very limited in their housing choices now, that they will be forced to purchase a condominium or live in an apartment rather than buy a single-family home, which you know they might want because they might want to raise a family and they might want to have a backyard and a private space, maybe a pet, a dog, or a cat. They're finding that their choices in this county now are becoming very limited. So we're seeing limitations being imposed on us in our transportation system. We're seeing limitations being imposed on us in our housing. And from what you're saying, we're going to be seeing limitations imposed on us in terms of our ability to work, where we work, and how we get there.
Well, that's true. Our life will be totally controlled. And there's a statement by Maurice Strong, and he has been in the United Nations for, oh gosh, could be 50, 55 years. But he was the Secretary General of the Earth Summit, too. And he said this statement, quote, "It is clear current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, consumption of large amounts of frozen and convenient foods, use of fossil fuels, appliances at home and workplace air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable.
Jeannie, I'd like to take a minute to let our callers know that we're taking phone calls tonight. We did have a caller tonight already, and I'd like to give the phone number to the studio. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-245-4237. Now, we talked about Richland County, South Carolina. I know that there are counties all over the country that are experiencing some aspect of this transportation plan that we've been talking about. It's basically sustainable development that we're seeing. And when you quoted from Sustainable Monterey Bay, I thought it might be interesting to let our listeners know what sustainable development is. And maybe you could give us a definition, Jeannie.
Sustainable development, I'd actually like to define it as sustained poverty. That's what it's all about. It's not growth. What they're saying to us is our lives will have a better quality. We'll have a sense of community. And actually, what the UN, United Nations documents say is for the current generation to be able to use the earth resources in a conservative way. So there will be enough natural resources of the earth for future generations. That's it in a nutshell. But who is getting all those natural resources are the elitists, the corporations, and they will rule the world.
They seem to have a very long-term plan where we only see our future and maybe the future of our children. They seem to understand that this is a long-term project and that by the time they establish sustainable development in the United States of America and have it well established, they will be in control of pretty much most of the country. Yeah. And the private property ownership will have declined to the point where it's negligible for the average person. And our ability to go out and use the beautiful open spaces and the rangelands and the mountains of this country will be severely curtailed through their sustainable development projects like open space, wildlands, and things like that.
Well, yeah, they're actually bringing the forest to us, and that's why we have all this open space and buffer zone around these cities now, and they're buying up all the land around the cities, and that will be our buffer zone. Then they're creating, well, it's also called, I want to say sustainable development is also called smart growth.
Mm-hmm.
And comprehensive planning,
mm-hmm.
or growth management. Now, you know, I did a 38-page document on the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. This was an assessment report that came out of the Biodiversity Treaty that was really never ratified by the United States Congress. And while I was living in a small little house in the valley in Central America, I had time to go through this 1,100-page assessment of the plants and the animals and the earth, and it just struck me this evening, Susan, that I have a list of unsustainable products, and one of them is railroads are unsustainable.
So they're going to make it miserable for us to drive, get us out of our cars, put us on the trains, and then shut them down because they're unsustainable.
See, we're in a transition period mm-hmm. right now. The ultimate goal is to have us in these Soviet-style eco-villages, and we will have no more railroads because we will just be walking in this little eco-village. And I'm looking at the unsustainable items like livestock. They don't want cows and sheep, fencing or pastures, herbicides or building materials, floor and wall tiles, fish ponds. I mean, this is an amazing document. I didn't realize how important it was until I got through with it, and I thought, if people knew about this document, they could pretty well understand what is happening today. You read a newspaper, and you say, oh, yeah, they don't want a golf course. That's one of the unsustainable items. Now, where you can get this Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, it's in the Sustainable Development Syllabus by Radio Liberty. And their website is www.radioliberty.com.
It's
a Sustainable Development Syllabus. And there's one other report I made was the World Bank Water Report.
Yes.
It's only 7 pages,
mm-hmm.
but it tells precisely how they're going to get control of the water, Susan.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned golf courses, because I was remarking the other day, we've got a little group of people in Watsonville who are trying to shut down our airport to build government-sponsored housing, taxpayer-supported housing. And I was wondering out loud to the group of people I was chatting with, why don't they take one of the golf courses and put housing on the golf course instead of shutting down the airport? We had a huge earthquake here in 1989, and all of the major arteries, the major roads in and out of the county suffered damage, and many were closed. And the way that we were able to fight the fires and take care of our injured individuals was through the airport. We used helicopters to scoop water out of the bay and put it on the numerous fires that started in the city of Watsonville. We used the helicopters to airlift injured people out, and we also used the helicopters to bring in food and medical supplies. Now, shutting down the airport would be a real tragedy for our community. And yet the people who push this kind of things, the, you know, taxpayer-sponsored housing advocates, they never go after something that, you know, maybe they like to golf. They would never think of shutting down a golf course, but they're certainly willing to take our airport and you know, put houses on it and take our ability to use, you know, an airplane away.
They're going to shut down the golf courses eventually, because that is unsustainable in the UN documents. Also, airplanes, yes, on page 728 of the Biodiversity Assessment Report, any machine that uses fossil fuels are not sustainable. And this is so important to get this list so you'll understand what's happening.
We are painting a very big picture here of the future of the United States of America, the future that our children and our grandchildren might have.
Yes.
But we're not making this stuff up, folks. This stuff is really happening. The Measure J that we've been talking about, that is going to take take a proposition for a bond and take half of the money that gets raised and actually use it for socially engineering the people of Santa Cruz County into getting out of their cars, making them think cars are bad, because some of the money will be used to discourage people from driving, to put them on these trains. And then you say, at the end of it all, trains are going to be unsustainable, and they're going to take them away as well, too.
Right.
This is a very bleak future, and people have to understand this is our future unless we wake up and start to act.
I like to say, if you do not know what a ballot measure is about, really understand it, don't vote for it. If you understand it completely, then yes or no. But it's so important to get educated, because in order to remain free, we have to be informed and we have to be educated. There's one last thing on these transit eco-villages. Do you know you have to fill out an application for going into these Soviet-style transit eco-villages?
To visit them?
Actually, no. If you want to rent a unit or own a unit, you have to have an application. And they give you, it's just like going into a psychologist. In California, we have the California Psychological Inventory. Here, if you go into the website, www.soultrain.ito, I'm sorry, ITGO.com. They ask you questions like, and you have to answer this, what do you believe in? What is unique about you? What do you love? And it goes into about 43 questions. This is in order to apply to buy a unit in these eco-villages.
So free enterprise doesn't exist in Santa Cruz County, what you're saying, especially if they continue to build these high-density housing developments that they're building. You do not have the choice. If you have the money, you do not have the choice whether or not you can purchase one of these units. They are going to decide for you if you can purchase it. Is that what you're saying?
They're going to decide for you how you think, what kind of person is coming into that eco-village. What I described is going to be it's mind control. And what it is, it's a self-formatted and graded psychological inventory, and it defines the person's paradigm and gives them sufficient information to totally manipulate you.
We're taking calls this evening at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and Gina, we do have a caller on the line. It's Karen from La Selva Beach.
Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, the reason I'm calling, I was looking at the newspaper yesterday on page 2 of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and there's an article, and the headline says, New Affordable Housing Project, Boasts On-Site Child Care Center.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you had seen that article.
Yes, I have. Isn't that interesting, huh? That's a transit center in Watsonville. And they're going to have child care provided for the people that live there. But did you notice the last sentence? It said it was going to be built over a parking garage.
Right, and with only 62 spaces.
Yes, and this is what they're doing. I talked about airspace development, where they're going to only buy the airspace. Now, I'm not sure about this project, but the airspace development said they were going to buy the airspace over parking lots and parking garages. Isn't that interesting? It fits right in.
You know, Jeannie, the Seacliff project that they're going to build that was recently approved by the Planning Commission, there is a requirement that they put on the developer that there would be child care available in that development as well. And you'll see that in all the community plans, wherever they have high-density, taxpayer-sponsored housing developments, you'll see that they are required to put in child care facilities and community rooms for education of they call it for community education. So anyway, Karen, I don't know if you're aware that there is a plan for La Selva Beach, but I believe there is. Karen? Well, it seems like we've lost both of our callers. To recap, if you've been listening to the show, we've been talking about a new transportation proposition, Measure J, that will be on the November ballot in Santa Cruz County. It is supposed to be a fund that will widen the highway, which is actually over capacity in Santa Cruz County. But the lanes that they'll be adding are actually lanes that will only be able to use by a very small group of people, people who are traveling in high-capacity vehicles like buses and commuters, or people who have a number of passengers in their cars.
Hi, Susan. I'm back.
Well, great. I'm glad to have you back. Did we lose Karen as well? Yeah.
I think we did, yes.
So, Jeannie, isn't there a plan for La Selva Beach?
Oh, yes. They've got it quite close to the chest, but there's a railway that is... We're ocean, by the way. We are ocean community. Just beautiful here. And we have a railway track that goes by us. So I'm sure... There's a plan. They haven't come out with it yet. You know, Susan, I came across this poem. I thought it was very apropos. It was done at the Boston Pops Orchestra when my husband was going to college. And it's so apropos to what's happening. It talked about commissars in committees. So if I could do just about three verses.
Well, can you hang on to that for just a minute? Because we've got Karen back on the line.
Okay,
I think
Karen.
She had another part to her question.
Okay.
Well, the question I have is, do you think, going back to this article about this complex in Watsonville, because the opening sentence sounds just great. It makes you want to move there. And I'm wondering, is there a connection between high-density housing and, you know, the close proximity to the transit center?
Yes.
There's a real strict relationship between the two.
Right. Again, are you there, Susan?
Yes. Go ahead, Janie. Tell us about the link between the transportation and the housing.
The eco-villages, the high density, has to be built near transit stations. They have to be built near railroads. That is the plan. So anytime you see a transit station, they are going to start high density, and it will be what you just said, Karen, regarding this transit station in Watsonville.
So they're really going to change the face of Santa Cruz County, where it's been a county with two cities, not really large cities, kind of well-spaced with, you know, a comfortable density, into a series of very high-density developments. Each town that people have always kind of looked at, the sort of the small-town feel, the Soquels and the Aptoses and the La Selva Beaches, they're going to become very high-density and very urban in their feel, and it's going to happen fairly quickly.
It's very, very quickly. 2008 is another benchmark year, so within the next 5 years, I would say a lot is being done.
And it's really important to state that it isn't because the people who want to buy homes in Santa Cruz County are asking for this kind of housing. It's because our county government and our city governments are getting grants and funding to build this kind of housing, and they can refuse the funding, but they don't, because they are in cahoots. They want to put this high-density housing in. They're making all kinds of deals. They've got cronies all over the place. The cronies down at Sol Train. They've got cronies in the housing project developers that are building the low-income, taxpayer-funded housing projects. They've got cronies they've got to pay off all over the place, and they're taking the grant money to build this high-density housing to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of corruption when this comes into place. A lot of deals paid underneath the table.
Jeannie, we're just about out of time, and I really appreciate talking with you tonight. You do have a lot of information about sustainable development, sustainable transportation, how it's relating to the kind of development that's happening in Santa Cruz County.
Right.
Where we're going from single-family homes and a very rural feel to a very high-density kind of county. This is Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio on Radio Liberty. I'm Susan McLaughlin, and thank you for joining us this evening.
From sea.